Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk, coming at you on a Friday night special edition. We got a lot to talk about. Got to talk about the BMF title. We got to talk about some news that came out this week. We got to talk about what's the Atlanta announcement of the quote-unquote Conor January 18 fight.
Yep.
There's a lot going on in the world of MMA. What's up, Keys? Well, how goes it, bro?
What up? I'm excited, bro. I don't mean to interrupt your train of thought there, but it's just like, I'm just excited because it's like now, you know, for the people that listen, they know, the people that listen to our show, they know that, well, it's kind of obvious. We really haven't been as active as we've been in the past lately. And it's just so now that, and I want to be more active, but, you know, regardless of the fact, it makes it more exciting for me when we do get on. So when we get on now, if we get on once a month instead of once a week, you know, it's a longer time away. And then when I do get on here and get to chop it up with you, it's just that much more exciting to do our show. So that's why I'm excited. I'm just happy to be here.
That's what's up. So you ready for the holidays or what?
Hello? Yeah.
Yeah, man. So what's on your
Christmas
mind tonight? Let's go ahead.
Christmas.
Let's go ahead and jump
Yo,
into
Christmas
it.
Christmas is my favorite time of the year.
It is?
Yeah. Well, actually, I
didn't know that.
I mean, the fall, I mean, my favorite season is the fall, and Christmas is not in the fall, so, I mean, there's different parts of the year I like. I like the fall time for the weather, but now we're kind of going out of the fall season. We're kind of getting into, like, the winter cold now a little bit, so it's been getting really cold. I mean, I think it's colder out in Denver than it is here, but it's really getting cold, at least to our standard out here now, so. I'm freezing, but I do like Christmas, though. I love Christmas. I just like the way it is when you go out just in society during Christmas. At least from my perspective, the way I look at it is, and not even really, like, Christmas is really for the kids, but at the same time, like, when I go out, I can at least still see that. Like, the holidays feel different as I get older, and they feel less and less, like, prominent, but the one thing I could say is that when I go out during Christmas season, like, you know, in the stores and things like that, I can feel it. Like, it's like there's almost like a happiness just like in the air, you know, and everybody just seems to be in that holiday spirit. And that's just the thing that I really like about Christmas time. That's why I literally love that time of the year, because it's just like you can just feel it in the air. It just like hits you in the face, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't like the winter time, but I do like Thanksgiving and Christmas, especially now that I have grandkids, and it was, you know, get to see all my kids are grown now, so, you know, get to see my grandkids, the excitement on their face, stuff like that. But my favorite holiday season is actually anything that's in the summertime, Memorial Day, Labor Day, or 4th of July, because the weather is nice. You know, living out here, you know, actually, today it was like 70 degrees. Tomorrow it's supposed to be like 60. But come Sunday, it's supposed to be like upper 20s, mid to upper 20s. So, you know, the weather's all right out here. You know, you just got to deal with it. But, you know, but the weather might be getting cold, but the action in the UFC is getting hot, bro. A lot of stuff going on in the UFC and MMA, man.
Well, first of all, that transition you just did was that was effective, man. That was very good. really, that was very smooth. But that's definitely true. I mean, one thing that I wanted to get into was, we really gotta like just take a step back and just like look at everything that transpired at Madison Square Garden, man. UFC 244. Oh my God, that card was a doozy of a card, bro. That was a doozy. I watched that. We actually ordered it. I actually ordered it at my house and kind of had like a little fight party. I mean, like, I just like, you know, I never usually order the cards at my house. Like, usually I go out to a, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings or something like that to watch it, or to like a local bar that's playing it to watch it. But this time I felt like just order it at home and just be, you know, be with other people, you know, because I like to be around people who are like big fight fans and just order a card. Like, you know, some of my family used to do that, and they haven't been doing it lately, but it did have that feel for Madison Square Garden where ordering the pay-per-view, ordering the fight in-house, getting a whole bunch of food and just watching, you know, watching everybody throw down was just crazy. And the card had, bro, I think it, honestly, if I, off the top of my head, I want to say the card was like upwards of 75% finishes. Like, there was so many knockouts on that card. I don't think there was definitely nothing, no other outcome that happened more than the fight ending in a knockout on that card. There was no, I can't even recall any submissions. I'm not sure if I even saw any submissions. I feel like it was people getting knocked out left and right, and a lot of it was first round finishes. I want to say there was like four or five, maybe six first round finishes on that card. Did you notice that trend of people just getting knocked out left and right?
Yeah, it wasn't too many decisions. A lot of people, they ain't let it go to the judges card too many times on that card. I think that had to be probably one of the most action-packed cards the UFC done had in a while. And actually, it was great viewing. I watched the fight at Hooters. And actually, when I got to Hooters, about 7 o'clock. And I was like, man, damn, this place packed already, man. It was like hardly anywhere to sit. But I got there, and I pulled up and meeting some coworkers there, but they all ended up flaking out on me. So I was like, yo, I'm looking around, and there was like one seat at the bar. And I was like, yo, man, anybody saying? He was like, nah, man. And he was on crutches. So make a long story short, the guy to the right of me, he was a big UFC fan, and the guy on the left of me, he was a kind of sort of a UFC fan, but he was more of a boxing fan. He was just there with some friends. But that card definitely made for great entertainment. And if you didn't know, the ESPN prelims were actually the highest rated prelims they had in like a long time. I think they said they got like 1.1 million eyes on the prelims. So that was actually good business for the UFC.
So is that one of the highest viewed prelims ever?
Yeah.
The highest viewed ever?
I don't know if it was the highest, but it was the highest since they've been on ESPN.
And just to, well, I mean, well, to credit that, I mean, the prelims, just look at the prelims card. There was so many good fights. So that's one thing I really like that they always try to do. You know, the UFC always at least tries to make the, and it usually pans out. Usually the November and December cards seem to be, it's almost, they almost do it in a way where it seems like you're watching two main cards because of like the level of the fights that is on there. Because a lot of times you have prelims and it's like people don't know. It's a lot of fights that are just like, fights, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, it's a decent fight, but like they had really stacked out matchups, really great matchups from the prelims all the way through the main event. And usually MSG, it's almost, I always say, it seems like you're watching a main card and then another main card after that one because of how good fights are. And, we saw a lot of really good fights, and you know, it's so competitive with the level of it like that you had to take the Johnny Walker and Corey Anderson fight, which is a banger of a light heavyweight fight, and you had to take that, and they had to put, they had to move that from the main card down to the prelims so they could move another banger of a lightweight fight, which was Kevin Lee coming back down to 155 to fight undefeated Gregor Gillespie, who is no longer undefeated now, but at the time. And just looking at those two matchups, and you just think about that, that they had to move that fight down to move that one up, just shows you how crazy the card really was of the fights that were booked, that you had to, you know what I mean, making that kind of move where it's like both, like any of the fights could have been, like that whole prelims, any of those, you could pretty much interchange any of those fights with the main card, and I wouldn't blink an eye. Like it's really on that level where like the matchups are so solid and it's such entertaining fights that it really is like that.
Yeah, because I think for me, I would have rather had Anderson and Walker on the main card and had Kevin Lee versus Gillespie on the headliner preview, the headliner main event. I mean, the prelim main event, because the thing is Lewis Lee is coming off what? I think he was on like a 2 or 3 fight losing streak. And then
yeah,
Gillespie is up and coming. So basically, I would have preferred to have that fight as the prelim main event so you could get Gillespie like some shine. So fighters that didn't know him, I mean fans that didn't know him, you know, they could actually, you know, get to see him, you know, get to learn more about him, because normally the prelim main event, they normally kind of do like a mini countdown show about the fighter. So it would have gave people a better chance to find out who Gregor Gillespie was. So I would have probably put Anderson and Walker on the main card and put Lee and Gillespie as the headliner for the prelims. But back to what you were saying, all the prelim fights were finishes. All four of them ended in KO. And all the fights, 5 of them went to decisions. And on the main card, 3 out of the 5 fights actually went to decisions. So, yeah, it was an action-packed night, man. No submissions, all KOs or decisions.
And how about this? So, Kevin Lee knocks out Gregor Gillespie. That was a vicious knockout, man. I was kind of shook by it. How do you feel about that finish?
I think I was more shocked by that finish than I was Anderson Walker. A lot of people were more shocked about Walker losing to Anderson, but I was more shocked by Lee finishing Gillespie, because Gillespie, he has been on a tear here lately. And, you know, I think if he would have beat Kevin Lee, it would have made him more of a household name. I mean, us as fight guys and guys that are UFC quote-unquote pundits, we know who Gregor Gillespie is. But a lot of people that watch pay-per-views that aren't really deep into the game, they don't know who Gregor Gillespie is. So, and also I think if Kevin Lee would have lost, he would have been cut from the UFC. I don't see him. I think if he would have went on a 4-fight losing streak, I think they would have released him. So I thought he was fighting for his UFC career. And he said he switched our camp. So sometimes me and you, when we sit here and talk about fighters, you know, when a fighter goes on a losing streak or their style isn't panning out against top-notch or different competition, sometimes you have to look at changing camps. And I guess changing camps for him actually worked out for him in this fight. But we have to see how it works out for him going forward. But it was a good performance by Kevin Lee.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I immediately said when I saw that, I mean, first of all, I was blown away. Like me and my friend, we were watching the fight, and we were just like, "Yo, what just happened?" Like the way it almost seemed like it was so perfectly timed. Like the whole thing was just so. When they did the replay, I was just in awe at the finish. Like, it was just so crazy, the that culmination that Lee hit him with at that time, ironically, Lee, the culmination would just seem so perfectly timed. It was incredible. And then the second thought that I had was, after just being shocked for like 5 minutes watching the replays, was, yo, everybody, this is TriStar Gym Kevin Lee. This is the debut of TriStar Gym Kevin Lee, who has been out there training with Farasa Hobby, you know, GSP's gym. He's been training with those guys where Rory McDonald trains as well, so he's definitely in some great, great company training over there. And I feel like that Kevin Lee we saw was a different guy than the one that we've seen in his past 3 or 4 fights. That Kevin Lee was out for blood in there, and he really broke through with that fight. I feel like he's really in a different state now that he's been training over there. So shout out to that.
Yeah, we just got to see how he does going forward. You know, we ain't gonna get overexcited by one win. You know, although it was an exciting finish against a guy that, like I said, has been on a tear. I want to see who he matches up with next. I wouldn't mind seeing Kevin Lee versus Anthony Pettis, being that was a fight that was supposed to happen sometime earlier this year, but it didn't happen. So I wouldn't mind seeing that fight next with Kevin Lee. But I'm looking for him to possibly get better, show us more than what he showed us in this fight. And let's see whether or not he can get back on track to get a championship fight. I love what he said after the fight, when he said, I'm not chasing a championship. You know, right now I'm just trying to get better. I'm trying to get familiar with my new camp. And I love that. Because, you know, normally a guy that's, you know, that's been around the block a couple of times, coming off a couple of losses, the first thing they want to say is, you know, I want to get back down. They think they should be in a championship picture. And I like the fact that he didn't go that route.
You're still talking about Kevin Lee, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because actually, yeah, he actually did make a call out. I just wanted to confirm you were talking about him because, you know, our boy Pettis has been calling out Diego Sanchez, so that's probably going to be his fight for right there. And Lee's really excited about seeing Sanchez versus Showtime Pettis, everybody. But you're going to have Kevin Lee. He's going to fight. He's a top 15 lightweight. I really don't remember his name off the top of my head, but I think he's like friends with Khabib and stuff. He's like of that group. I think they like train in the same gym or something like that. He's a Russian fighter. I don't know his name, but Kevin Lee called him out after the. I don't know if it was right after. If it was at the. I don't know. I don't think it was right after the fight, but it was later though. I think he might have like called him out on Instagram or something like that, and then I saw the guy respond, and I want to say he's like number 14 or 15 ranked, maybe even 13 ranked, but I know he's definitely a ranked fighter, and he's shown. He's pretty good. I can't remember, but it would be a good fight. And I know they were supposed to match up before.
Is it Islam Makhachovic?
Yeah, if that's the guy, yeah. If he's top 15 ranked, yeah, that's the guy.
Yep, Islam. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, he was gonna fight Islam, and then I remember because they were supposed to be matched up before the Kevin Lee and RDA fight got booked. I think it was. Or it might have been, yeah, it was sometime before that. Because I know it was like, I want to say it was earlier this year. Like early 2019, they were talking about getting that one done. And then there was like, I saw rumors of it, but then it didn't come to play. And then they ended up getting the RDA fight, and then he took some time off. Yeah, I want to say that was earlier this year. So they were supposed to be matched up before, and now they're both calling each other out and they want to fight. Probably Dana White will make it happen. So I don't doubt we see that in the next couple months.
I hope not. I hope we get Pettis versus Lee, being that the UFC hasn't booked Pettis versus Sanchez. I hope they go back and re-look at Pettis versus Lee. I think that's a better fight for both guys. Diego Sanchez, I just don't see why anybody would be calling out a guy that doesn't get you in the championship picture. And basically, I just don't see it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Damian Maia calling out Diego Sanchez. It just makes no sense to me. Like I said, I would rather see Kevin Lee versus Pettis. If Pettis doesn't get Kevin Lee, let's get Pettis versus Dan Hooker. You know, let's have some of these top guys fighting each other. I mean, Islam, he's ranked number 15. I think I would most likely rather see him fight, like, either Charles Oliveira or Gregor Gillespie, because Gregor's still going to be in the top 15. Or let's get Islam versus Edson Barboza. I mean, there are guys out there that Islam can fight that can move him into the top 10 instead of Kevin Lee fighting down. Even though Kevin Lee is ranked number 8 and Pettis is 11, I still think that's a great fight to make. So, but we'll see how it shakes out, man. The UFC, I hope they're not buying stock into all these guys wanting to fight Diego Sanchez, because I think he's punch drunk. I think him beating Mickey Gall was kind of like, okay, he beat Mickey Gall, okay. But then he turned around to get dominated by Michael Chiesa. So I don't see where this goes with Diego Sanchez. But let's talk about another surprising fight that a lot of people didn't see happening in the outcome. Everybody was on the hype train of Johnny Walker. If Johnny Walker wins, he should get a title shot against John Jones. And Corey Anderson goes in there and destroys him in the first round. I had a feeling that Corey Anderson was going to win, because I've been telling you and anybody that would listen is that we haven't seen Walker in a real fight. And I knew that Anderson would make him, would put him in a situation of a real fight. Walker kind of shocked me not coming out with his normal full blast. You know, he come out like a ball of fire. He didn't come out like that. And I think that kind of played in Corey Anderson's hand a little bit, because Corey is kind of a super technical type of guy. He's technical with his striking and with his takedowns and wrestling. And I think Walker let Corey build some confidence by starting on slow. And one thing Corey said after the fight was, when they was watching video of Walker, they saw that he was susceptible to the right hand. And what he finished him with, a right hook. He hurt him with a straight right jab, and then he finished him with a right hook. And I think Walker, he is a good fighter, but sometimes you have to be in fights to gain experience. And him finishing all his opponents in the first round in a matter of seconds and minutes, I just don't think that lends to winning fights against veteran guys.
Well, one thing that I really like, when that finish happened, the thing that I like was immediately thinking, that my first thought was, what happened to the kicks? Like, Johnny Walker, that was a big part of his game. Like, and I think that was only his. He had the 3 fights in the UFC. That was his 4th one. And every one of those fights, his kicks were a major part of his game. That was part of his whole approach. He comes in with wild kicks right off the bat, and that led him to the wins that he got, were his kicks. Now, how different would his game have looked if he was not incorporating the kicks with his punches? That fight showed that. Like, I don't know why, like you said, usually he comes out and almost like he exploded out of a cannon and almost like not running at his opponents, but he immediately engages and he tries to get to the center of the octagon. He meets his opponents in the middle. He's you know, trying to beat them there. This time it seemed like he looked a lot more reluctant to start anything. And then it was like he was really I saw the fight that one time. I haven't like got a replay of it or anything, but I didn't see him throw one kick, and I feel like that really threw is a big part of his game and why he had the success that he had. And I think that if he was throwing kicks early, I think that would have, I'm not suggesting that he would have won if he threw kicks, but I just think that even if he just threw kicks to the body, I think it would have changed the pace of the fight and it wouldn't have been the quick finish that it was. I think we at least would have seen the fight go through the first round if he was incorporating his kicks. I think we would have seen a different style of fight instead of that, you know, quick finish in like the first 2 minutes or whatever it was. And I'm not trying to knock Corey Anderson. That was a great finish. And I'm actually about to talk him up right after we get off this topic. But I'm just saying, you know, changing that element of your game, it's like Barboza when he's like, if Barboza doesn't throw kicks, like everyone's like, what's Barboza doing? Like, where's all the, you know, where's all those spinning Barboza's had like those certain wild head kick knockouts in his day, and then it's like when he doesn't use any kicks, everyone's kind of like, where's all the body kicks from Barboza? And then when he does use the body kicks and he fought Dan Hooker, he dominated the fight. Like, there's some guys that there's a certain element of their game that it makes up their game. It's a big part of it. Like, he absolutely dominated. Barboza dominated Dan Hooker because he was utilizing his kicks, and he kept throwing kicks to the body, and Hooker just didn't have an answer for it. You know, he was basically just getting pieced up the entire fight from what I saw. But that's what I'm trying to say, is that I feel like Johnny Walker, his kicks, from what I saw in his fights in the UFC, were a big part of his game, and I'm just confused as to why he didn't even try to throw a kick in this fight. Did you notice that?
I think that may have been a part of his game plan if the fight would have went longer. But the fight then, the fight was only, 2 minutes and 7 seconds? So, Basically, he really didn't have time to establish his game plan. Because, like I said, he didn't come out and do what he normally does. And I think that kind of led Corey into being a little bit more aggressive with his jab and his striking. Whereas I think if he would have came out like a ball of fire like he normally does, I think it would have backed Corey up a little bit, had him thinking a little more. And, you know, we don't know how it would have played out. And I think maybe the kicks would have been, probably would have played a major role in his offense. But we don't know. We won't know because the fight only lasted 2 minutes and 7 seconds. And I think Walker right now, I think he needs to train on sticking with his style, like you said. Come out like with your hair on fire, using your leg kicks. Don't be the aggressor. Don't be the person that's waiting to counter punch or counter react and stuff like that. Come out, do what you do, and dictate to your opponent the kind of fight you want to have. And I think he let Corey dictate the kind of fight they was going to have by coming out slow. And Corey just, man, he just did what he did, man. It was super exciting. And a lot of people were shocked, not me. I thought Corey would win that fight. Because I just wasn't a believer in Walker.
So, now this brings me to my next question that I've been dying to ask you this week, ever since that happened. Now, Corey Anderson has since called out John Jones, and he put out a tweet, and he said something along the lines of like, yeah, I wouldn't want to fight me either, and he tagged John Jones. So, that tells me that maybe they sent Jones a contract to fight Corey Anderson next for his title defense, and maybe John, you know, turned it down or hasn't responded to it. Do you think Corey Anderson is the guy now he said he was before, and a lot of people contested it and said, what has he done to deserve a fight with Jones? But now he just finished the guy that a lot of people were saying should be next for Jones in the first round. So where does that land him? Do you think he should fight Jones next?
I think on the Slack, somebody posted a tweet that John said that, you know, after sitting down with his team and looking at tape, that they came up with the idea that Reyes would be the better fight and he is the more dangerous fight. So that's the fight they decided to go with. Actually, I'm reading a tweet now from John. Just finished a coaches meeting studying Dominique and Corey's careers. Established Dominique's definitely the more dangerous fighter, beating his ass next. And I think that's what Corey was replying to that tweet from John Jones. And to me personally, I think Corey should get the fight because I still can't get that Uzdemir fight out of my head that Reyes lost. Reyes did not win that Uzdemir fight.
Hello?
Reyes lost it. Uh-huh, I'm here.
Phone was. What do you say?
You hear me?
Yeah, no, my phone went off speaker for some reason. I got cut off the line for a second, but I'm good. What happened?
Well, what I'm saying is I feel Corey Anderson should get the fight against John because I still can't get the Uzdemir Reyes fight out of my head. Reyes lost that fight. Reyes lost that fight. He did not win that fight. So Corey basically is on the Corey is on the longer winning streak. He's beat the most top guys, and I think he deserves a shot. But if we're being real, what does Corey Anderson do that when you see him fight that you say that he has a chance against John Jones? What does Dominique Reyes do in the cage that tells you that he has a shot against John Jones? So I think any which way you go, I don't think any one of them beat him. But the guy that's more deserving is Corey Anderson and Muffle. And I even wrote that a while back in an article I wrote on who should fight John Jones next. I said Corey Anderson then, and I'm saying Corey Anderson now. Actually, I said Santos. That was before he fought Santos, and I had Corey Anderson second.
Okay, so you answered my question saying, yes, Corey Anderson should be the next guy after that win. So thank you for answering my question. I don't remember his name off top, but he did this poll on Twitter the other day, and I really haven't been active on Twitter much at all lately. I barely even look at it because it's just nowadays, I think I got to unfollow like 900 or so people because I just, the mumbo jumbo that I see on there is just total garbage, and I just don't care to see it, so it just makes me not want to go on it. But someone posted a poll, and it was I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he said basically Reyes or Anderson for Jones next, and it was like 65% of the poll said Reyes, and 35% Anderson. And I had to respond to the poll and just say how ridiculous that result is. That, you know, to those 65% of people, how do you explain how Reyes deserves the shot more than Corey Anderson? If you just look at both of their resumes and look at the top guys that both one of them have fought recently, and then look also at both of their last fight, who they fought and how the fight went. I mean, both of them have first-round knockouts, but look at who they fought, though. So it looks impressive on the outside, but really look at who they fought, though. You're telling me that based on their last fight, because a lot of times Lee says you're only as good as your last fight. And Reyes looked, okay, first-round knockout for both of them in their last fight, but look at who they fought, though. Johnny Walker, regardless of people saying that he was a hype train and got derailed, is a far, far, far more dangerous fighter than Chris Weidman. You cannot even if someone were to call into the show right now and tell me that Chris Weidman is a more dangerous opponent than Johnny Walker, I would have to kick you off the air. I would not even – I can't even entertain that conversation because it's just silly. Like, it doesn't even make any sense. It's just like one of those things when someone's not listening and then they try to jump into the argument and just say anything just to be argumentative. That's what that is because – and that's what I don't understand about the narrative that Reyes should be next. How do you tell me that knocking out one of the most chinny – probably the top three most chinny guys in the UFC – warrants you a title shot. Just because Chris Weidman and Rockhold were both talking a whole lot of doing a whole lot of trash talk up to their both of their 205 debuts, you guys seem to make the narrative that beating them means that you go for a title. When Błachowicz knocked out Rockhold, everyone said, oh, it should be Jones to fight Błachowicz. Why should Błachowicz get the shot because he beat Rockhold? I understand about getting a big win, but over Rockhold, another one of the most chinny guys in the UFC. And if you don't understand what I mean, I say chinny is that they have almost no chin left. They get knocked out by a feather. Like those guys are easily top. Both of them are. You could flick them and they're going to be knocked out. Okay, like these guys are done. Like probably both of them should already be retired. Like their chin is gone. They can't take a punch. You could basically Overeem, actually, you know, his chin is really depleted, and Arlovsky's chin is really depleted. But you could actually – I would put both of them two guys as having worse chins than Overeem and Arlovsky do. And heavyweights lose – you know, they can't take a punch after a while because, you know, some of these heavyweights because they've been in so many wars and getting hit by, you know, 260-pound fighters is different than getting punched by a lightweight. You know, it's a different type of power that you're getting hit with. So these guys get knocked out more often. So it's understandable. But, you know, Rockhold and, you know, before I get carried away, the point is beating those two guys to me is not impressive. You know, I don't understand why Reyes beating Weidman would be, for any reason, a number one contender fight. Who has Weidman beaten in his past four or five fights? I don't even know if he has a win in his past four or five fights. So you can't even really say who has he beaten. He hasn't even won a fight.
Yeah, he won a fight. He beat Kevin Gastelum via submission. But outside of that.
That was like, but he's been getting beaten left and right. Besides, he got that one win, and he's been losing it to everybody else before that and after that.
And he hasn't just been losing. He's been getting knocked out. He's been getting finished. So it's not like he's been, like, losing a split decision, you know, stuff like that. He's actually been getting KO'd, and like I said in the article I wrote, once again, is Weidman will go down probably in history as being the flukiest UFC champion ever. Because outside of his two wins against Anderson Silva, he really hasn't done nothing. He hasn't done anything. He beat Kevin Gastelum, which he got dropped and almost finished in that fight also. So it's like I go back to what you said. To me, Weidman wasn't a number one contender fight, and I still feel Reyes lost to Uzdemir, whereas Corey Anderson shut down the hype train of Johnny Walker, and I look at Johnny Walker as more of a tougher opponent than Chris Weidman. So I think Corey should get the fight, man, and you know, I know John is at a point in his career where now, you know, they probably come to him and be like, who you want to fight next? And I think he probably wants to fight Reyes because Reyes is, quote-unquote, being hyped up also. So, you know, I guess right now he has to fight the most hyped guy, and the most hyped guy is Reyes. And if you look at it, all the guys he done fought here lately have been the most hyped guy. Anthony Smith was hyped at the time he fought him. Santos was hyped at the time he fought him. I think if Walker would have beat Anderson, he probably would have fought Walker before fighting Reyes because he would have been the most hyped guy. So I don't even think it goes by the most deserving. I think he's been fighting the most hyped person.
Yeah, that's understandable. It's just, I guess for me, it's just frustrating to see the hype go into such a ridiculous place. You know, Ngannou at the time, when Ngannou was on his, you know, win streak that he was on before Stipe took his soul, live in Boston, Massachusetts, where I watched the fight live in awe at the domination that Stipe, the dominating performance that Stipe put on in Boston. Before that, Ngannou had racked up enough wins. You could say he was hyped and then he, you know, got rushed to the title. He should have fought more contenders or maybe fought a wrestler like Stipe or a guy with a similar pedigree before fighting Stipe. You could argue that, but at the same time is you can't say that he didn't beat guys who were, you know, it's not the same situation. Like, there's been other hype trains who actually beat good guys, as where, you know, Reyes literally got dominated by Volkan, and they gave him the fight, I believe, because he was an undefeated fighter, and they just, and the UFC wanted to hold on to his image as being an undefeated fighter and have an undefeated fighter go on to fight Jones. I just feel like that is what they wanted to do, or at least a thought that they had. Okay, let's just give this guy the fight because he's the undefeated fighter and, you know, could be the guy better for business to keep on going than Volkan, who has losses on his record and got dominated by DC. You know, people already seen him lose. But really, Volkan won the fight. And the fact that Reyes said that people thought that he couldn't, you know, defend takedowns or doesn't have a ground game because he, you know, was stuck in the clinch versus Volkan makes no sense to me. You know, he said he wasn't ready he didn't expect Volkan to try and take him down. So therefore that's why he looked bad in that fight because he wasn't prepared. Why would you need to prepare for someone to take you down? Like the first time that Volkan tried to get him in the clinch, you could say, oh, I wasn't ready. I didn't expect him to clinch. Usually Volkan just wants to stand and bang, so he's not going to try and get me in the clinch or take me down. Okay, but then after he took you down the first time, wouldn't that make you ready the second time to start defending takedown? I don't understand how that goes on for an entire fight that you just, man. When that fight happens, I would be the biggest Jones fanboy ever. When he fights Reyes, I'm going to be the biggest fanboy ever. You know, it's going to be beautiful. I just need, you know, if one thing the MMA gods need to give to us in, you know, late 2019 or 2020, whenever the fight gets booked for, is to have Jones absolutely dismantle Dominic Reyes. Absolutely dismantle him. I need it. Please grant it to us, the MMA gods. I'm saying MMA prayers to see this domination. Please. Give us that gift.
And for Reyes to say that, though, it just goes to show you, man, what I've been saying probably for the last year and a half, is as an MMA guy, as an MMA fighter, why would these guys not train on all aspects of the game? Why wouldn't you train to be taken down? I mean, 9 times out of 10, if you hit a guy with a shot and they get hurt, their next course of action is normally to try to take you down so they can recover. So for him to say that's kind of like asinine to me, but, you know, it is what it is. Me and you both feel that Uzdemir won the fight. And I think Reyes deep down knows he lost that fight. But at the same time, he has to save face. But before we get into the BMF fight, you know, we got a little bit of news we got to talk about. I saw that you tweeted today that when is the announcement of the Cerrone-Conor fight going to happen? What is your take on this? How do you feel about this?
Maybe I'm uninformed. I haven't seen an official announcement. And one of my friends...
It hasn't come out,
but, a lot of people say, it's happening that day. We know it's happening, so that, that's... A lot of people would say it basically is announced because we know the fight's happening, but that's not the type of announcement I'm talking about. I'm talking about when is the UFC going to officially announce it? Like, when are they going to put the fight poster out there with the date and with the events and with the venue? When are they going to put that official fight poster out there from the UFC, not a fan-made poster? Because I've seen some fan-made posters for this fight, and I know it's not real. I don't need the official UFC announcement. I'm not talking about Dana White announcing it at a press conference. That's not an announcement. We know the fight. Well, it is an announcement, but it's not it's not the official announcement until you put out the fight poster, and I can look up that event on anywhere, on anything, or on UFC.com or on Google, type in the event, and you see that's the main event. Like, that's what I'm talking about, not just rumors or Dana White. I'm talking official announcement, set and concrete.
Yeah, I feel you. And it goes back to what I think on our last show, we talked about it, and I said, I feel Conor is making an announcement that the UFC had no idea about. They didn't even know he was saying it. Because if they had an idea about this fight, you don't think they would have had them come out there at the end of the press conference for UFC 244 to announce that fight? Yes, they would have announced it at that press conference. So I think Conor has drummed this fight up to pressure the UFC into making a fight that he wants. And now the UFC has to scramble to make this fight happen. And I think he actually planned the UFC with that. And that's why we haven't heard anything yet. Because there's no way the UFC will undersell a Conor fight. They just wouldn't do it. They will oversell a Conor fight before they undersold it. So this, like I said, I think Conor puts some stuff out there in the universe that the UFC didn't know about. And when he put it out there, he kind of put pressure on them to try to make a fight for January 18th. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and, I guess the one thing that would make a lot of sense because, with the fan base he has getting behind the fight and now that many people are expecting to see him fight on January 18th, so now it kind of makes the UFC kind of back into a corner like, wow, like, all these McGregor fans are, like, dying to see the fight. They expect that it's definitely happening this date, so now it's like if it doesn't happen, it's really going to be – a drop in the ball for the UFC, so we really got to, like, push to get the fight done now. And, yeah, that would make sense. I mean, the one thing people said to me when I, had a similar argument as, like, what if he just said that and the fight's not really, like, me just saying, like, so being suspicious, me just being like, where's this announcement? And then people saying, well, if the fight wasn't being made, then, people keep saying about Cowboy Cerrone's tweet when he posted – a picture, and he wrote, "Need I say more?" I'm actually looking at it now because I wanted to see if it was still there. Because he hasn't tweeted anything else that would be related to that fight besides this one picture when he has a bottle of Budweiser and then a bottle of Proper 12 sitting at what looks like at the bar, and they're just sitting next to each other, and the caption says, "Need I say more?" And he just posted that, like, cryptic thing, and then just no other post he made was relating to the fight after that, so... But a lot of people use that as.
He did tweet something saying at Conor saying sign the contract already. I think that was on last weekend or right before the BMF, the Madison Square Garden pay per view. So he did tweet something saying sign the contract. So, but I don't know, Keys, man. I think your boy, I think he drummed all this up to put pressure on the UFC to make a fight. And like I said before, and I think you may disagree with me on this, but, you know, we agree to disagree sometimes. Conor has always tried to steal the spotlight over every big fight that's coming up by tweeting some stuff or, you know, throwing his name in the ring to fight somebody. And he has done this for probably the last four or five pay-per-views. And to me, it's become his M.O. He gets out there to stir his fan base up, to get them talking about him. And for some strange reason, I can't be the only person that has noticed this, that he does this. But,
I mean,
you know.
No, he definitely does, like, tend to tweet. He does tweet about a lot of the big fights that are coming up. Like, I know one thing he said, too, about the BMF fight was, I don't know word for word what he wrote, but I'd never seen something, some headline that said, like, McGregor says that he invented the BMF belt or something like that. And that was, like, you know, maybe 2 weeks before the fight itself. And that right there, if he were to say, you know, bring up the BMF belt, and he had referenced the BMF belt, you know, multiple times lately. That you know, that's just another that's an example of what you're saying, is that, you know, him trying to take away the attention from, you know, Nate Diaz and Masvidal's fight.
Actually, he said
he designed
the BMF belt. He said he designed the belt.
Oh. Yeah, that was the one. I'm trying to understand, like, did he do the design as, like, the what it, like, physically looks like? Or are you talking about he designs, like, the concept of it, of there being a belt? I don't get that part.
I know that Dana White came out and said that Conor had no input in the design of the belt, that he had no, that they haven't heard from him on how the belt should look. So basically, that was once again Conor, you know, doing his thing as far as, you know, putting some attention on him. Because those were the words he used. He said he designed the belt. So, because Dana White came out and said the design of the belt was to look the way it looked because it was going to be a one-of-one. So he didn't want it to look like a regular championship belt. He wanted it to be silver, kind of dull, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know, man. Your boy Conor, man, I know he's an attention whore, but I think he does a disservice to his fans when he do stuff like this, because his fan base is so supportive of him, and they get so on alert anytime that he comes out and say that he plans on doing this, this, and this, and then he never follows through. So how many times you going to keep bringing your fans to their feet just for them to sit down again? So, you know, we'll see what happens, man.
Well, that brings me to another thing that I wanted to ask you about, and that is, so we covered the, you know, Lee knocking out Gillespie in his return, TriStar Kevin Lee. We talked about Corey Anderson knocking out Johnny Walker and possibly being the number one contender for John Jones. We talked about the you know, McGregor and Cerrone possibly being a fight. We don't know. You know, UFC 244 had a lot of good fights. You know, I also want to shout out to, you know, not shout out, but just to point out Stephen Thompson and Vicente Leck. I don't know, I'm not sure how that I might have like screwed up the pronunciation of his name, but
Luque.
That being, in
Luque.
My opinion, the fight, yeah, Vicente Luque, that I thought was the fight of the night. And at the time that it came on, I said to my boy, I was like, that fight, I said in the second round, I was like, this fight is about to steal fight of the night from whatever we thought was the fight of the night before that. Because like, we usually like to call out what we think might have just got fight of the night, like as it happens. And as that fight was on in the second round, I was like, bro, I think this fight can really steal fight of the night right now. And he was like, oh, no way. Because like, some other dude had like 10 takedowns in his fight before that. So he thought that was a fight. But then when they did get on and then the fight finished and then, you know, Wonderboy won and everything, and then they come out after, it actually did get a fight of the night, the fight of the night bonus. So that was an amazing fight. I hope they put that out soon. Next, when like Wonderboy or Vicente fight again, they could put that fight out as the YouTube free fight, because I would really like to be able to watch that fight again, because it was just so entertaining for me. Two guys just standing and banging, but at a high level, though. And Wonderboy was definitely looked really good in that fight, and he definitely, because he definitely, you had to have been impressed with Wonderboy in that fight, Lee, because you've been very critical about Wonderboy's performances in his recent, not all of his fights, but you know his Woodley fights. You said that you were not pleased with his performances, and he was only counter striking and things like that. He was not counter striking versus in this fight. He was actually on the offensive the whole fight, and he was, you know, he was going to the body, he was doing everything. He was right there, you know, trying to. He was right there in the mix, you know. He wasn't, you know, playing it safe or anything like that that you people might have seen from him, you know, in the past. But Wonderboy looked great, man. I hope to see him in that same way in his next fight. I'd like to see Wonderboy versus I'd like to see Wonderboy versus Ponzinibbio. That would be the next fight that I would want to see, because I know Ponzinibbio was supposed to fight Lawler, but then I think he fell out of the fight. But instead of them coming back
different
and making
class.
A Lawler fight, what?
Different weight class. Remember, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson now is in. He's a middleweight. He's a middleweight now.
Really?
Yeah, that fight was for that 185, Burt Dog.
Vicente?
No. You're right. My bad. I was thinking of Darren Till.
Oh, okay.
But
okay,
I have to
yeah.
agree with you. I have to agree.
You thought he looked good, right?
Wonderboy looked good. And looking at the scores of the fight, I'm kind of surprised. Because the scores of the fight was 29-27. You ready for this? 30-26. So that means he had two 10-8 rounds according to the judges. I don't know about that part about it. I don't know whether or not I gave him a 10-8 round in that fight at all. But he definitely surprised me because he was more aggressive. He actually let his hands go. And he just did some stuff that I was happy to see. Because sometimes his fights can be boring because he's a counter striker or, you know, a counter puncher. You know, he lets the opponent dictate the pace and then he reacts to it. But in this fight, he came out. And he just was dominant. And I was thoroughly surprised, and I was happy for him.
Yeah, no, I really hope that they can, you know, for one of their next fights, they usually, when, you know, a lot of times they release the free fights on YouTube. I don't know if you pay attention to YouTube at all, but that UFC usually releases a free fight, you know, usually for title fights and things like that. They release, you know, one of the two in a title fight, so maybe they won't do it for these guys. But I would really like to see them release that fight somewhere so I can watch it again, because that was one of my favorite fights in a while. I was really, you know, that one this year, and then And then Gastelum and Adesanya. Those are probably my two favorite fights in 2019 so far. So both of those, I was just like, oh, and yeah, and then the Holloway. Yeah, I really like Holloway Poirier too also. But, yeah, those two right there, Wonderboy really just got in one of my favorite fights in 2019. So I hope they release that in the free fight so I could watch it back. Please, UFC, release that on the free fights. We need to see it. But, yeah, so that's just what I – nah, go ahead. I just wanted to bring that right there.
I mean, yeah, it was a good fight. I think Thompson, Ponzi would be a good fight. I would sign up to see that fight because
what, Wonderboy
Ponzi left, yeah, because Ponzi lets his hands go. That guy, he lets his hands go and he hits you with everything that he has in his body. And I think Wonderboy would definitely have to fight the same style of fight he fought against Luque, because he couldn't be a counter puncher against Ponzi because he might get knocked out because Ponzi is coming at you with everything he has in his hands. So, I'm with that fight for sure. But real quick, Ben, you know, we kind of over. What was your thoughts on the main event?
Yeah, so the main event, I was going to ask you about that, but then I got carried away with talking about Wonder Boy's performance. But, man, I really, you know, I picked Diaz to win that fight, and you know, I'm really not a fan of Jorge Masvidal. I mean, I've never really been a fan of him, but, like, especially in 2019, the way he tapped the cage, he tapped the, you know, when he knocked out Askren, it really said a lot about him to me, and I just don't appreciate that type of behavior. And ever since then, I can't get behind anything he does. But the Diaz fight, I mean, I was impressed with him, even though I'm not a fan of him. That's, I guess, what I'm getting to is that I don't support Masvidal really at all, but I was impressed with his performance. I feel like he dominated Nate Diaz pretty clearly, and he definitely won every round of the fight. You know, I think it was like three rounds they got through. I thought he won every round clearly, so, and definitely had some 10-8 rounds in there too. Diaz, I don't know if Masvidal just looked really good or Diaz just looked really bad. I don't know what was going on with that fight overall, but one of those two things is happening, if not both. And yeah, that's my take on it.
I thought that Nate was coming on in the third round. If somebody would have scored the third round 10-9 for Diaz, I wouldn't have been mad about it, because I felt like he was finding his groove. You know, he had hit Masvidal a couple times that caught Masvidal attention. So, you know, if somebody would have gave Nate the third round, I would have been mad about it. But at the same time, I think Masvidal came out with a game plan that he was going to be the aggressor. He was going to come out and let his hands go. He was going to put pressure on Nate. And that was his game plan. He executed it with perfection. And he definitely looked like the better fighter that night. I wasn't mad that the ref stopped the fight. But, you know, a lot of people wouldn't mind saying to go to distance because Nate and Nick Diaz, they cut easily. They bleed easily. If you watch any of their fights, you know, in the first round, they normally already cut up and already bleeding. And there was a picture that came out on Twitter where it showed that same cut Nate had in his previous fight against Pettis, and yeah, they allowed the fight to go on. But I think it wasn't the same cut. I think the cut that he got against Masvidal was worse than the cut he got against Pettis. And plus, he had got cut in the eyelid and under his eye, and he had a third cut. So I really wasn't mad about the stoppage, even though I wouldn't mind seeing Nate come out there for the fourth round and see how he performed, whether or not he could build off the momentum he had from the third round. But Jorge Masvidal did his thing. And I know you was upset about the way he acted against in the Askren fight, but I really wasn't, because I think Askren talked so much trash going into that fight that, you know, that Masvidal felt that way and he let it out. Remember, Masvidal barely said 10 words to the build-up of that fight, and Askren was doing all the talking. But Corey Anderson did the same thing against Johnny Walker, and I think I was more probably upset with Corey than I was Jorge, only because Corey has beaten guys ranked higher than Johnny, and coming into the fight, he said what he was going to do, and he did it. So, you know, sometimes the emotions of the fight comes out of you. Be it good or be it bad.
My thing with the Anderson and Walker, though, being different than Masvidal, and this is kind of off topic of what we're really saying, but before, because we're not really saying about the BMF, but it's just different because Walker didn't talk trash about Anderson. I mean, you could argue that Askren talked a lot of trash about Masvidal. I'm not going to say that he didn't. But Walker, the only thing Walker did was he kind of like subtly was looking past Anderson, only because he made a post, you know, kind of he tagged John Jones and saying like, you know, you could be my new pussy or whatever, like, I don't know, something like that. And kind of calling out Jones, which kind of like says that he was looking past Anderson a little bit. So I guess that would be the only thing. But really, though, like, it was really the fans, if anything, that were talking down on Anderson, not Walker. I didn't see him say anything about Corey Anderson besides, you know, subtly, like, looking past him as an opponent.
Yeah, I can get that. But, you know, that UFC card was a great card. It lived up to the billing. UFC 244 might go down as one of the best fight cards of 2019. Had some of the best finish. Probably one of the most action-packed cards of 2019 also. Just got to see what 245 do now. 245 is coming around the corner. And that's going to be another good one. And then we have to see what happens in January. Do we get the Conor fight? Or was it all just a hoax? So, what's your last words for the night, man?
I don't know. No, 115 is a good number. I was glad we got to get 115 out because we haven't been as active lately. So, I was just happy that we got to get on. And yeah, that's pretty much all I got. I'm just happy to be here.
You know, I want to say shout out to our man, Evan. Man, he's part of the scrap. Evan has been a caller into our show a couple times, and now he's part of our team on the scrap. So looking forward to see what he puts out when he gets the writing and stuff. So shout out to Evan. I don't want to see Masvidal versus Canelo. I'm tired of these MMA guys thinking they can get in the boxing ring. Fight these boxers, please stop it. You guys do not have a chance of going in there and beating a boxer unless you get lucky and catch them. Outside of that, with everything being even, you're not going to beat a boxer, so let's stop it with that. But episode 115, Leah Keys Real Talk, signing off for the night. Live, love, laugh. Live your life. Tell somebody you love them every day. Tell somebody you love them. And always have a good laugh. With that being said, Lee and Keys out. And as always, peace!